there are many things we can do to adjust their treatment regimen, where maybe they were on inadequate doses or inadequate durations of treatments that would have otherwise been therapeutic. So I think, yes, there's a lot of hope. And then, of course, we have newer agents. We're just in a total different conversation. From when I was first on the Migraine Summit, you know, to now, we have so many new agents and new therapeutics. So, you know, every year there's something new. And so there's a lot to have hope about.
Imagine one morning you wake up and then every second, every minute, every month, every year after, you're in excruciating pain. You try every treatment. You go to every specialist, and still it feels like there are no answers. Hope seems almost impossible. Well, first of all, you're not alone. And second of all, there are treatments and there are answers. And to help us discuss all of these options is Dr. Tishamay Monteith. Dr. Monteith, welcome back to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a really important topic. I'm really glad that you want to shed some light on it.
Okay, so first of all, is this a common problem? Because before I joined the migraine community, I thought I was the only person in the world who could possibly have an ongoing migraine attack that lasted 8 years at this point. I thought I was completely alone.
Yeah, actually, it's a really common thing. Migraine, as we know, is a common neurologic disorder, the most prevalent neurologic disorder. Or at least in terms of disability and women 50 years or less. In headache centers, continuous migraine is a regular visit. We see it all the time in our specialized care centers.
Okay, and let's go over these terms to make sure that we're all saying the right things. We've heard continuous, refractory, intractable, status migrainous. Which ones should we be using?
Yeah. And so I think that's a really great question. I think us as a medical field needs to, you know, spend more time sorting out these terms so we're all on the same page. But when we talk about intractable, generally speaking, we're referring to status migrainosis, a migraine attack that is going beyond 3 days. And so in the setting of acute treatments, usual treatments, or sometimes even emergency room visits, that migraine attack is not going away. So it's intractable to therapeutic. So that's generally what intractable means. When we talk about refractory, we're now talking about continuous migraine that is persisting despite preventive therapies, multiple classes of preventive therapies. So refractory in terms of the European Headache Federation came out with some consensus guidelines, and they basically said you have to have tried every prophylactic therapy, class of prophylactic therapy, to be considered refractory. That could mean that you didn't tolerate it. So it could have been that you tolerated, for example, a drug called topiramate, anticonvulsant treatment, but you had cognitive side effects, so you had to discontinue it. So unfortunately, some of our treatments do have side effects. We do have to keep that in consideration, and that is tied into the diagnosis of refractory migraine. And then you have resistant. So for refractory, 6 months, you know, 6 months you've tried, and most people, as you mentioned, could go on for years, right? So not just 6 months, but a minimum of 6 months. It'd be difficult to have tried everything in 6 months, but you know, that's kind of how they label it. And then for resistant is for at least 3 months, and you've tried at least three different therapeutics in three drug classes. And so different than refractory is the resistant, so difficult to treat migraine.
And if we've gone over this 6 months, do we have any hope of ever getting back to being pain-free?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, the interesting thing, just kind of from a science perspective, is we talk about this continuous pain. But migraine is something that even if you don't have a active migraine attack, migraine is kind of always going on in the background. So there's what we call interictal symptoms, where patients may experience very low level symptoms, maybe not pain, but there's some photophobia or light sensitivity. There could be some sensitivity to the skin. there can be a little bit of processing issues that may be very low level, but overall can globally impact the quality of life of the patient. So migraine is a neurologic disorder, and in some ways it's always happening. But what we care about is the disability and the continuous pain. So absolutely. And I think that when we look at patients that are so-called refractory or so-called intractable or continuous, and we look at their med lists and their past treatments, there are many things we can do to adjust their treatment regimen where maybe they were on inadequate doses or inadequate durations of treatments that would have otherwise been therapeutic. So I think, yes, there's a lot of hope because especially when you're getting care from a specialized center, we can look at these things and see what have you really not tried or what did you try, but it was not an adequate trial. And then, of course, we have newer agents. We're just in a total different conversation. From when I was first on the Migraine Summit, you know, to now, we have so many new agents and new therapeutics. So, you know, every year there's something new. And so there's a lot to have hope about. And I've had patients that have had continuous migraine for decades, and we put them on some newer treatments. And in some really outstanding cases, they have maybe one or two migraines that, you know, they're back to using acetaminophen or Tylenol, you know, every once in a while. And, you know, they don't need to see me anymore. That is not going to be everyone's scenario, but, you know, there's certainly hope because there's drug development, and not just drugs, but there are other things too, other lifestyle things and comprehensive approaches to treat patients that suffer from continuous migraine.
That sounds so incredible. I can't imagine that moment where you have your first symptom-free moment and you finally get, you know, part of your life back that you've sacrificed to migraine for so long.
Yeah. It's incredible to see. You know, we need to see success stories too, and we do see them, but it's really lovely to see that patient that's intractable or refractory, so-called refractory, really get their life back, you know?
So I know a lot of us, once we've been dealing with migraine for so long, and we're not getting any relief from any of the drugs, any of the treatments, we wonder, do we have the right diagnosis? How do we go about making sure that we do have the right diagnosis?
Yeah, it's really important to think that. And whenever I have patients that come back that aren't doing well, in the back of my mind, I like to sometimes go through kind of an algorithm of, you know, symptoms and, you know, objective data to see, you know, are we really what we think we are? And so, you know, there are some signs, historical signs that might suggest that a patient doesn't have migraine. They may look like they have migraine, or they may have migraine plus. You don't have to just have one headache disorder. You may have multiple headache disorders. You know, asking the doctor is the first thing. You know, we've been going at this for some years now, and I'm not getting better with the basic standard treatments. Could this be something else? You know, is it, and could I get a referral to a headache specialist? You know, if you're intractable, if you're refractory, I think that's the time that you may want to schedule an appointment with a headache specialist.
Definitely. And in your clinic, if you find people that are long-term patients and they do look for different diagnoses, are there any common ones that you see come up again and again?
Yeah. Well, you know, looking at this, the definition of what we call refractory migraine, according to the consensus, they definitely put a list of differentials or different types of headache diagnoses that you should consider before you label someone as refractory. You know, you definitely don't want to label someone as refractory when they really have some other type of headache disorder. And some of that can include patients that have headache related to changes in pressure. So, or brains live in a certain kind of physiological pressure state. And when that pressure is too low or too high, that can produce headache. And there could be different reasons to why a patient may have high or low pressure-related headaches, but those patients have refractory headache and don't respond to generally may not respond to the standard migraine treatments and have different types of symptoms. And so the pressure-related headache disorders are just one type. There are patients that have, for example, there's a condition called cluster headache, which is a trigeminal autonomic cephalgia. It's just generally a seasonal headache. They get it certain times of the year. But there are patients that have chronic cluster headache. And so they're having cluster attacks on a daily basis. And they could have inner ictal pain that looks similar to a continuous headache. And this class of trigeminal autonomic cephalgias, that cluster headache is one of them. There are other ones. There's one called hemicrania continua, which is a continuous pain on one side associated with what we call cranial autonomic symptoms. So these are people that have not just a continuous headache, but they may have watery eyes, red eyes, nasal congestion, drooping of the eyes. So all on the same side of the pain. And that's this continuous headache that is exquisitely responsive to a drug called indomethacin. And it's defined by its response to indomethacin. It's a rare disorder, but it's something that you need to think about when a patient has a one-sided headache to make sure that they're not indomethacin responsive and do not have this condition called hemicrania continua. There are other types of headache disorders that are not migraine, like one condition called new daily persistent headache. That's a headache that starts within 24 hours and becomes a continuous headache thereafter. And it's an intractable pain. It can look just like migraine. It can look like tension type headache, but it's a continuous pain. It may respond somewhat to migraine treatments or treatment for tension type headache, but it's essentially a continuous pain that just doesn't go away. We know that it's there because the patient can tell you what they were doing when that happened. They actually remember the day it happened, year, they remember everything. Can sometimes be associated with a number of factors like a viral prodrome. New daily persistent headache is important to diagnose. The treatment may overlap with primary headache disorders like migraine or tension type headache, but different condition. And then when a patient's presenting with this headache that becomes continuous within 24 hours, again, you want to think about, well, could this be a low pressure headache that is commonly caused by CSF leak? So we have the brain and the spinal cord, and then we have coverings of the brain and the spinal cord. We have a tissue called the dura that holds the fluids that circulates the brain and the spinal cord. And when there's a tear in that dura, that can cause, well, you know, the fluid is a cerebral spinal fluid, so that can cause a leak, and then that leak, a pressure gradient, so then you have low pressure headache, you get up, you have a postural headache. And so it's really important to look for that, because that can be, even though these things can be rare, not uncommon in headache clinics and not uncommon amongst people that have refractory headache. And the funny thing about that is that you may have had that postural headache to begin with, but over time, those features can be lost. And so you can look just like a person with migraine, but you're running around with a CSF leak, which could be a slow leak. And so you have these symptoms, and it's important to get that diagnosis, because the treatment is not migraine treatments. It's patching that tear, right? So once you patch the tear, the pressure becomes normalized. Sometimes it's more complicated. You may need to do one or two patches to get that right. But, you know, it's important to get the diagnosis, because then you can provide targeted therapies for your patients.
I had no idea that with CSF leaks, the postural component could be lost over time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So how would you even tell if you do have a CSF leak?
Yeah, it's hard. You try and hopefully have a time machine. So you have to kind of go,
perfect.
You know, go yeah. In your time machine and you go back to the time where that started, and you could ask, you know, well, did you have, at first, did you notice? Some patients may notice, some patients may have not. And then there's certain risk factors, patients that had a history of back surgery, women that were pregnant that had epidural. So they had like kind of an intervention that caused a tear in their dura, and it may be a small tear, and that tear could over time unseal itself And then there are patients that have had heavy lifting, and that kind of that heavy lifting can produce pressure on the dura. There are patients that, let's say they've had a pneumonia, they're doing a lot of coughing. It's not good being a headache specialist sometimes, because I was coughing the other day and I was like, I'm gonna tear my dura. But you know, you ask patients and sometimes they tell you, I had pneumonia, yeah. And then 3 months later, I developed this. And sometimes you had epidural 3 years prior. I had one patient that had an epidural like 3 years prior, and then she was lifting. She was never quite perfect after the epidural. She had a little bit of dizziness, but it was very intermittent. And she was doing some heavy lifting and then developed a CSF leak. And we were able to determine it. And you know, eventually you need imaging, imaging of the brain to start, and then imaging of the spine to try and localize where that leak is.
So before you lose those features with the CSF leak, if you're laying down in bed, are you good to go, symptom free?
It's defined as a postural headache. So headache is worse generally within 15 minutes of getting up. Laying down makes it better. And that also is the case for migraine. There's movement sensitivity, so that can be complicated. But not every patient is completely symptom free with laying flat.
Interesting. And is CSF leaks, is that the same as the pressure headaches you were talking about previously?
Yeah, well, there's the low pressure. So that would be the low pressure headache. But there's also a high pressure headache, right? So idiopathic intracranial hypertension, or IIH, also known as pseudotumor cerebri. And this is more common in women and tends to be more common in women that are obese, but not necessarily women that are obese. You could have significantly gained weight. And that shift in weight can put you at risk for IIH. There are people that have had orthopedic injuries, and because of that weight gain, due to inactivity, have caused something like IIH. But there are other comorbidities. There are things like anemia, for example. There are endocrine disorders that can be associated with it. There are also drugs that can sometimes cause patients to have this syndrome where the pressure becomes high. So that can be a separate disorder. And it's really important to get the diagnosis of that disorder, because that in some patients can lead to blindness, because the pressure in the head can also cause pressure around the eye, the optic nerve, and the pressure around the eye can lead to blindness. So that is one thing that we absolutely do not want to see. And it's important to get that diagnosis really quickly. You know, history is one way to do it. Another way to do it is MRI of the brain. And there's some characteristic findings that suggest that the patient may have high pressure headache, which is not always there, but may be there. And then, of course, if the patient has that high pressure headache suspect, then you want to do what's called a lumbar puncture, where you're actually putting a needle into the dura and gathering fluid, and then measuring the pressure of the fluid. And if the pressure is higher than what is normal, then that is a diagnostic of a high pressure headache. And there's treatment for that. And usually most patients do well with prophylactic therapies. Topiramate, the drug that we spoke about, that can be used for migraine, can actually also be used for IIH, so that's one thing, but there are other diuretics that can be considered. And sometimes patients that are really refractory need to have things like shunts. And that's a neurosurgical procedure, especially if there's a concern of potential blindness. And so the treatments are different depending on the diagnosis. So I think the kind of overall thing here is that, yes, continuous headache can be common in the migraine population, but it's important to think about other causes of continuous headache, because the treatment can be different.
So most patients who have been living with continuous headache have probably had scans at some point. Are these diagnoses or these findings something that that doctors are so used to looking for that they don't have to double check? Or is this something that patients should ask for? Hey, will you check for high pressure? Will you check for low pressure?
So it's a really good question, because, you know, the MRI of the brain, if you're not suspicious of these diagnoses, first of all, you may not order the right image. For example, patients that have this low pressure headache or a CSF leak, if you don't order the study with contrast, you may miss some of the findings. There are other findings that you could find without contrast, but you can miss some findings. So you need to have, first of all, a level of suspicion. And then for the IIH, there's some soft signs that if you're not having that index of suspicion, for example, there's a sign called empty cella that is characteristic. It's a soft sign. You see it in the general population, but that along with the symptoms and suspicion puts patients at higher risk for the potential of having a high pressure headache. And so you really need to have that level of suspicion when you're ordering the exam and then when you're analyzing the image as well. And it's really important to try and look at that image yourself and, you know, maybe even discussing that with a neuroradiologist, because some of these things are very subtle if they're going to be present.
And is there any way, if we've had a scan in the past, to take this to a doctor and ask them to look back retroactively to say, hey, am I a candidate for one of these? Is this a possible diagnosis?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do recommend that, you know, you can go to wherever you had the image done, and you can ask them for a copy of that, and you can upload it. Like at least in our institution, we have a link, and patients can upload their imaging on the link, and the neurologist can review that image. And so absolutely, that is something that can be done.
Oh, that sounds great. That would be so ideal. Okay, so does identifying treatments which may have worked for us in the past, even if it was just a little bit, or identifying treatments that were horrible for us in the past, does that help, you know, narrow down the search for what it could potentially be or what potential treatments in the future could work for us?
Great question. And I think it's really, really important. And I appreciate you asking this question, because, you know, it just makes our jobs easier. And it's hard for patients. You know, you've had this for 20 years, you're bouncing around, you move from here to there, you don't necessarily have your records. But it's really important to try and track. And I think these days things are easier with some of health systems that are connected, but to track your medications, the doses that you were on, the duration that you were on, the side effects, and then whether it helped or not. And both for prevention as well as abortive therapies. Because first of all, we don't want to put you on something that you had a horrible side effect to, or we may reconsider something that you were on, but the dose was very low. So it's very helpful to know, because we don't want to waste your time. And then also, and we want safety first. And also in terms of insurance, we're living in a world of insurance. We want to be able to get you the best treatments, first line treatments that sometimes, unfortunately, the insurances don't want to pay for firsthand. But if we say that you've tried these things, it's helpful to then get you some of the first line treatments that we know have higher level of evidence for efficacy. So that's the first thing. It's really important to have good notes. And then, of course, when we're thinking about other conditions, you know, some of the more rare conditions like the trigeminal autonomic cephalgias, and in particular, the indomethacin responsive syndromes, it's helpful to know whether you've tried something like that or not, if you have a unilateral headache. Because if you did and you were on a great trial, we were not going to retry that for you. We're going to move on, generally speaking, and reconsider other things. So medications and procedures can sometimes help us understand whether you have a condition or not, with some level of kind of skepticism, because we don't diagnose based on a pharmaceutical response for most of our conditions, with some exceptions, like epidural blood patch. So if you have the CSF leak that we spoke about, a blood patch where you're getting blood and then putting it to seal the spine. So it's an interventional procedure, seal the dura of the spine. And, you know, if you didn't respond to that multiple times, you may question, well, is that present? Also the same for cervicogenic headache and facet blocks. These are interventional procedures that can sometimes be diagnostic. So the answer is a little bit yes and a little bit no, but super important to have really good history, medication history, and it's much easier to do that with electronic health records.
All right, going on to medication, like we were talking about. So we had a viewer, Ellen, and she asked, we're constantly being told you need to look out for a medication overuse headache. And, you know, it's a huge problem. But she says, if we're having, you know, daily headache every single day and we can get some relief, is it still worth worrying about? Like, do we still need to limit our number of medications? Is that still a concern if you do have daily pain?
Yeah, great question, Ellen. And you're speaking for so many people that have the same question and frustration. So I'm glad you asked the question and had the courage to ask the question. And so what I would say is, for the most people, the answer is yes. There may be a small subgroup of people that they've truly tried everything. They're refractory, and maybe triptans, frequent triptans are the best for them, but that's really not the standard patient. The issue with medication overuse, or the concern about medication overuse, is that there's an increased sensitization that occurs in the setting of overusing acute analgesics. And so that increased sensitization may lead to worsening pain over time. It's hard to imagine that you could have worse than where you are right now. It's possible. It could also lead to the acute treatments not working as effectively as they used to work. What you need and depend on is, like, now not going to work as well because you used it too much. That can sometimes be the case. And a third potential concerning scenario is that in the setting of acute analgesic overuse, overusing some of these acute treatments, some of the preventive therapies that are gold standards may not work as effectively in the setting of overusing acute treatments. So, having said all of that, we do have different strategies for addressing patients with medication overuse headache. And it may be reasonable to put a patient on a preventive therapy while they're still using those triptans on a regular basis, because once they have really good preventive therapy, it could be that because the headaches are less, they passively use less triptans. It's not a struggle. They have less headache. They're not, it's not something you're addicted to. You just want some relief. And so, it could be that it's not an immediate plan, but it's an eventual plan. And it really just depends on who you are, where you are, and the concern for medication overuse. So the idea is that you would transition out of that and maybe transition to other things. But, you know, looking at your needs and what better strategies and prevention is really the cornerstone of. And, you know, some patients get hung up by the word prevention. They're like, well, I have headache every day. How can you prevent something that's already there? We can call it what you like. We don't have to call it preventive, but we can call it a treatment that reduces the number of migraine days that you have, reduces disability, and the need for acute medications.
And when you were talking about the strategies you may have to try to deal with medication overuse headache, if we want to do a trial to see, hey, maybe that is playing into my everyday symptoms, maybe it's not the entire thing, but, you know, what can I try? What would they be, and how long of a trial would we want to do that for?
I don't think there's a true answer to that. I think it, just generally speaking, you know, by 3 months, if someone's off the analgesics or still having frequent episodes, you know, the pharmaceutical is probably not in their system anymore. Now, there are people that I have had patients that have been on opiates for years, and they're still having withdrawal symptoms months after the discontinuation. They're having rhinorrhea, runny nose, and other symptoms that, you know, that it's changed the receptor biology, which is kind of, you know, the chemistries in your brain, they require a receptor that these things result in signal transmission. And so medication overuse is one thing, but dealing with the underlying primary headache disorder is another thing, right? So there's this thing called plasticity, where your brain changes that are happening. And these are like instantaneous connections and interchanges. And so the long-term effects of medication overuse in susceptible people maybe more pronounced, especially in those with a migraine, which is kind of the number one comorbidity associated with medication overuse.
And are there any ways that we can tell if there's a difference between medication overuse headache and our daily, you know, migraine?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, just the way the International Classification of Headache Disorders 3 has labeled it is that if you're overusing acute analgesics, so depending on the class of medication, it could be more than 10 days or more per month, or 15 days or more per month, depending on what that is. And that's been going on for at least 3 months, you have 15 headache days or more. That is medication overuse headache just by the number. So they label it, but I do agree that there's probably could be a subset of people that even though they're using this, it may not actually be in their case medication, but just to keep things in a common way of communicating, that's how it's labeled. But I think your question is about in terms of symptoms. So there are patients that have overusing acute treatments, and when that medication is wearing off, that headache is coming back. So let's say it's 3 a.m, you're waking up with a booming headache. And, you know, there's a common medication called butalbital, and butalbital can be used in combination with other medications. And it could be that you're using this multiple times per day and, you know, overnight while you're sleeping, you know, that level drops and that headache can come back. So that's kind of the classic way of thinking about medication overuse headache, but not everyone has that.
And if we have different medications, acute medications, which work for us, is it a cumulative day count, or is it, you know, can I use a triptan on this day, or even, you know, different triptans within that class? Do they all count, or are they a separate total?
Right. Another excellent question. So it's based on the way it's defined is based on the number of days per month that you're using the acute analgesic. So if you're using a triptan and then a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory like ibuprofen, and then use Tylenol or acetaminophen all in one day, that doesn't go to your count if you're doing that twice per week and you're using multiple acute treatments. Let's say you have a level 9 out of 10 pain, very severe, you have nausea, vomiting, you're using multiple acute treatments within that day, that's okay. It's the number of days in the week or days in the month that matters.
So even if it's the acetaminophen on Monday and the triptan on Tuesday, that still counts as 2 days within the week.
Yes, because there can be a combination of medications that can still contribute to medication overuse. But that's a wonderful question as well. And a lot of patients trying to get around it by, you know, alternating their acute analgesics. One day they're going to do this, another day they're going to do this, and they're going to alternate. But that still can cause a medication overuse headache syndrome. I'm glad you brought up the medication overuse, though, because when we talk about refractory headache, medication overuse can be a common headache that can be associated with refractory headache. So it's really important before we label someone as having a new daily persistent headache, that the new daily persistent headache happened before the acute medication. There's some people that, let's say they have an arthritis or they had an orthopedic injury and they're using analgesics for that, maybe opiates, or they're using NSAIDs. And then this is a daily thing. And then they start to develop headache becomes more frequent. And then that, even though they initially have a bothersome headache, that headache now becomes over time, can be a frequent headache or chronic migraine. And so we have to be very careful that the headache that is quote unquote refractory happened before the medication overuse to really call it that refractory definition.
I wouldn't have even thought of that. All right, going off on the comorbidities, which you just spoke on a little bit, one of our viewers, Deanne, she asks, is there any way that these continuous headache may be an autoimmune condition or a result of something else? And if so, how would we even test that?
Right. So that's a wonderful question. The answer is that, you know, first of all, when we're talking about headache, and this is a generally clinical diagnosis, right? So these are based on symptoms. So it's absolutely true that there are patients that have autoimmune disorders that may be predisposed to headache conditions. And in some cases, it can be a continuous condition, different than the other diagnostic terms that we spoke about, the hemicrania continua, which is a trigeminal autonomic cephalgia, the high pressure headache, the low, those are different entities. But certainly patients with autoimmune disorders can have headache. And I think the important thing is to make sure you have a good primary care doctor and generally, and also a good neurologist and headache specialist. And you need a good comprehensive history, which includes not just the headache symptoms, but the general medical symptoms as well, good review systems. And that includes screening for stigmata of autoimmune disease. So if you have a known autoimmune disease, that makes it a little bit easier. But there are certain symptoms that may suggest this patient has could have an autoimmune disorder, and that can be tested in by laboratory workup. So by clinical history and by laboratory workup. And then, you know, even if you do have the diagnosis of autoimmune, tying that to headache, right? There should be some form of temporal association. And then some of the medications can also produce headaches that just add an extra layer of complexity. But, you know, for example, patients that have this condition called new daily persistent headache, some patients have thyroiditis or thyroid disorders that can be associated with this new daily persistent headache. So absolutely, continuous headache can be a manifestation of autoimmune disease. And so it's important to get that comprehensive evaluation.
All right. So before we end, let me see if I can recap this, and I'm going to need your help in filling in some of the details. So one, find a doctor who's willing to work with you, willing to be a teammate and willing to, you know, go the extra mile, relook at scans, reevaluate medication. And two, medical history is basically everything in these cases, and trying to figure out what has worked, what hasn't worked, what other diagnoses are out there, which we can rule out. And basically just keep trying, keep hoping, and someday we can perhaps all have at least a small break, and there's no reason to ever give up hope.
Never a reason to give up hope, recognizing that there are new advances all the time. You know, if you don't feel happy with your progress, bring it up with your provider. I think providers, doctors, they want their patients to be happy and healthy and well. And, you know, not every neurologist is a headache specialist. So there may be come a time where you may want to seek someone with expert knowledge. The American Migraine Foundation has a provider search that patients can go on and plug in their zip codes and find headache specialists in their area. There's also UCNS directory. These are people that have gone on to do the work to have extra certification to and also, they have to keep up that certification. It requires extra education. So there are places to go to find experts in the field, especially if you're suffering from refractory headache.
Your insight today has been incredible. Where can we follow your work?
Yes, well, please do. I'm everywhere, I feel like. but I tweet a lot, and I like to tweet about stuff that my colleagues are doing, patient education, advocacy stuff. So Headache MD, you can follow me on Twitter. I would love that. And then also, I am on the editorial board for the American Migraine Foundation. I contribute to a lot of their what they put out. And so check out the American Migraine Foundation. I'm also on the editorial board for the Brain and Life magazine. This is the patient magazine of the American Academy of Neurology. We have some outstanding headache literature this is all kind of written for patients. And there's a great search engine that you can go on and plug things up and look and learn about stuff. And so those are the places that I hang out. So do follow those places, tap into those resources. And then also, you know, join the advocacy community, and you can get some emotional support You can learn about newer treatments and network patients and, you know, really kind of, I think, take some level of control for the condition that has beaten you down for so long. And it's best doing that in a really healthy and supportive community.
I love that. And Dr. Monteith, thank you so much, not only on the behalf of the Migraine World Summit, but on behalf of all patients like me who feel like, you know, there really is nothing else besides continuous headache. It seems like we've had migraine forever, and sometimes it can feel so insufferable. And it's so wonderful to hear from a doctor like you who really understands it, really supports it, and really believes in all of our recovery. And I thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being a part of this. And I think you're absolutely amazing. You probably inspired so many people today. You inspire me. And so I really appreciate being here.